You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program. Our featured guest of the evening is now with us for the entirety of tonight's second hour. He is none other than David Cole, the documentary filmmaker, author, and journalist. For the past 5.5 years, he's written a weekly column where you can find it at Talkies Magazine. And his op-eds have been appearing in the Los Angeles Times, really everywhere. He's the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Republican Party Animal. He's appeared on 60 Minutes, 48 Hours, The Phil Donahue Show, numerous other television news programs. Tonight, he's going to tell his story on TPC, but that's not all. He's working on a forthcoming project that I think is going to be of great interest to our audience, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. David, are you with us?
I am indeed, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. We went out to California for you tonight, hence the intro music, so let's get down to it. You are a young man in your early 20s, and you're sitting down with Phil Donahue. Let's go back, before we talk about current projects, let's go back into the beginning, get a look at your bio, your book, all of that fun stuff. It is supremely fascinating to me. Let's start there. Early 20s, Donahue, what'd you do to warrant the invitation?
Well, in those days, when I was a young man, I was known primarily for being a Holocaust revisionist, which I still am, although the goalposts have shifted, boundaries have changed. But back then, Holocaust revisionism was, by and large, a very sincere effort to deal with some of the new information that was coming out regarding the Holocaust after the end of the Cold War. And there was a lot of new information, and there were not a lot of people speaking rationally about it from either side. In those days, the media was surprisingly receptive to have people like me, Holocaust revisionists, on the air. I might say they were perhaps a little too receptive because after a while, a lot of the organized Jewish organizations like the ADL and the Simon Wiesenthal Center began really cracking down on news or new journalism programs that would feature Holocaust revisionists. I was in there in those key 4 years or so when Holocaust revisionists could get on national TV. The Phil Donahue Show I did in early 1994, 3 years previously, I had done the Montel Williams Show in the middle there. You had 60 Minutes and you had 48 Hours. And a whole bunch of local and regional shows as well, and the Morton Downey Jr. Show. Each one presented its own challenge. The Montel Williams Show was the only fair and decent one I did. Montel was an exceptionally even-handed host, but more importantly, the audience was randomly selected. It was not stacked, either for us or against us. Give me a neutral audience. I will always win them over. Give me an audience of partisans that are stacked against me. Well, that's a challenge, and that was the challenge I had in the Phil Donahue Show. The audience was not neutral and had not been randomly selected, and Phil Donahue was an exceptionally hostile host, the most hostile host that I had dealt with in all of my time doing media, very unfriendly and very combative. And I walked off the show halfway through because I didn't feel that my continued presence there would be beneficial at all, either to me or to the viewers. But I got very angry, and I didn't want to explode on air, even though I think that would have been very good television. But I thought the more dignified thing to do would to just be take a hike.
Well, let me tell you something. I I watched actually part of that, the bulk of it actually, until you walked off anyway. It still can be found on YouTube. And I got to tell you, I thought you handled Donahue exceptionally well. I mean, he is one of these guys that thinks he's going to corner you with a gotcha question. You would say something smart, say something funny. I even saw the audience laughing, which they are certainly not supposed to do. So if that was the most hostile audience, I think you won them over. I think he didn't know what to do with you. And he would then pivot to, well, what about this guy you had a beer with? Or, well, you still believe this, right? And you were kind of laid back in your chair. And I think you just handled it like a pro.
Yeah, in fact, it threw him. When I started to win the audience over a little bit, it really did throw him. It threw him off his game. It threw him. You know what they always say, that if you're, forgive me for making what might be an unpleasant analogy, but they always tell women that if you're being sexually assaulted, interrupt the rapist's fantasy. Do something to throw off, because he's rehearsed this in his mind alone many times, and he wants to act out what he's had in his mind. And if you can just throw him off of his game and challenge the fantasy and screw with it a bit, then you can blur his mind. You can discombobulate him enough to maybe get away. In a way, that's what I did with Donahue. Donahue was very much trying to do a public reaming that he had rehearsed in his mind many times over. And when it didn't go the way he had planned, when I was not following the script that he had in his mind without obviously consulting me, then it threw him very badly. He got extremely angry in between takes during commercial breaks. He got very angry at his producer, and he was he just started to get more and more red-faced and angry as it went along. So I do think that faced with being as young as I was, in my very early 20s, faced with a hostile audience in New York, a city I don't particularly care for, and not having been given a day to just rest, which sometimes if they like you, they will do that. They'll fly you out a day early so you can have a day to rest. I didn't have that. And then, of course, you've got the madness that is a network TV studio, three-camera shoot, stage managers making hand movements and gestures towards you. In the face of all that, I probably did about as well as anybody could do.
Well, you won my respect. I will tell you that I had a somewhat similar experience in my mid-20s. I had a very short-lived period where I was brought on to CNN to offer commentary on racial issues, which I'd become known for talking about on this program. Obviously, we go back to 2004, and in 2007, I spent a month working with CNN, and they would fly me up and do these things. And it's not an easy thing to do, especially live television, but you're also right about this, is that that day is gone. You do not have people who are dissidents on any issue that are brought on to offer an opinion as part of a debate, as part of a panel, as part of anything anymore. That ended at really around that time, the late 2000s.
It's part of a shutdown of free speech, I think.
But in any event, you had that crush of media attention. We were talking specifically about the Donahue interview, but you had many others as well. That is so alien to anyone now, because obviously those shows just don't happen anymore.
Absolutely.
Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, our most interesting guest, David Cole, is going to give us more information. Obviously, there was a turn of events in his life that caused him to change his name and then reemerge as an equally interesting figure. We're going to talk about that. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only David Cole. He'll be right back.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a Friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Transport back in time to our nation's founding at the Freedom's Light Festival. Visit with freedom fighters, colonial artisans, music, contests, prizes, over 35 activities for the whole family. Schedule a school field trip and fulfill the federal requirement to teach the Constitution. Can you crack the spy codes used to win the Revolutionary War? Take home a founding document printed on the exact replica Isaiah Thomas used for the first Declaration of Independence. Register and compete in the Constitution Bowl. Join us September 17th through the 19th. Register at freedomslight.us. freedomslight.us. This event is completely free. Now more than ever, we need to ensure Freedom's Light is not extinguished. Let's keep this light shining in the hearts and minds of our children. freedomslight.us. That's freedomslight.us.
Ladies and gentlemen, back now with our featured guest of the evening, David Cole, direct to you from Los Angeles. I'm reading his bio now at Talkies Mag, where he shares his intellectual caviar each week with that column. David Cole, the Jewish Holocaust revisionist, spent 18 years as David Stein, the Republican Party animal, working with GOP higher-ups and blogging for major conservative sites. His outing provided many examples of cringe-inducing behavior detailed in his book, Republican Party Animal, which we are about to talk about. David, fascinating, fantastic first segment. And all of that that we were talking about, that period in your life where you went to Auschwitz, you were there. You filmed the documentary asking some tough questions and putting forth some tough evidence that warranted you all of these invitations to all of these big media outlets, but it also caused you some trouble. A hit was put on your life, which led you to change your name. Take us to that stage of your evolution.
Well, there was a very thuggish terrorist organization called the Jewish Defense League. Thankfully, it doesn't really exist anymore because it was mainly one guy, a man named Irv Rubin, another Los Angelino like myself, and Irv Rubin and his close circle of cohorts. The Jewish Defense League was a very violent organization. It had been implicated in murders. It had been implicated in bombings. It had burned down the Institute for Historical Review in the 1980s, which is a Holocaust revisionist think tank and publishing company. So Irv Rubin became aware of me about 1991. And at the time, the worst he could really do to me, which he did, was pop me on the nose a couple times. I took a few blows from the guy. Irv Rubin was a massive man, extremely tall and just large all over, and very much like a big, hairless ape, and quite intimidating, even to... I am not a fighter, and I don't ever really get into physical fights. But even to people I knew who were brawlers and fighters, Irv Rubin was still intimidating to them. So initially, Irv Rubin would trail me when I would be speaking, when I'd have a speaking gig somewhere, when I would be doing something in public. But it didn't get any worse than that at that time. But as the internet got bigger, you know, you go from 1991 and you go throughout the 90s, and the growth of the internet, the very defining feature of the latter half of the 1990s. By 1997, Rubin had really, probably he was one of the first guys to make a very negative, very malicious use of the internet. He used the JDL's website to put a hit out on me, offering $25,000 for my hide. And that might be the first time that the internet was used for something like that. And that's when it got too rich for my blood. I didn't mind taking the occasional punch to the face or chest or wherever, but once there was a $25,000 bounty on my head, and I'll be honest with you, I knew a few people, I had a few friends who I figured might want to collect that. So I wasn't just afraid of my foes, I was afraid of my allies too. And I decided the time was getting right to pick up stakes. And also, at this point, I'm in my late 20s. I've met a young lady. There are things that I want to do where I don't want to be hunted. I don't want to be constantly looking over my shoulder. So I made a decision right at the very beginning of 1998 that I was going to be David Stein. Stein was a name I plucked out of thin air. It had no connection to me familially. I wanted a name that sounded Jewish, because Cole, which is my birth name, does not sound particularly Jewish at all, even though I am a full-blooded Jew. So I wanted a name that sounded Jewish, but that I wouldn't have to keep spelling for people. And Stein just kind of stood out as, well, there you go, that's a nice, clean, monosyllabic name. So I just started to become David Stein. I began making mainstream Holocaust documentary films because it's a topic I know backwards and forwards. And once you know a topic backwards and forwards, you can tell it from any angle. You can tell a story from any direction once you know it well enough. And by the early 2000s, I've always been very politically minded. In L.A., there is not much for someone who leans right to do, because we've always been a fairly left-leaning town, but certainly by the early 2000s, that had become very pronounced. The anti-immigration movements that we saw in 1994 here with Proposition 187 in California, that was being dissipated through immigration and through the media and through political redistricting. So I would do little bits and of political things as David Stein. And then when Obama won the election in 2008, I was informed of an organization called Friends of Abe, which is the secret, or was, it doesn't exist anymore, was the secret organization of Hollywood conservatives, and I was known as David Stein, the very respectable documentary filmmaker by 2008, so I was invited to join this organization, and soon I became David Stein, the Republican political activist.
And party animal.
Well, I'm reading your bio right now. I mean, to have the success that you had in the early 90s is entirely remarkable enough, but then you reinvent yourself as a result of this bounty that was put on your head as David Stein, and then you have your work carried by practically every major conservative organ in the United States, including Limbaugh, O'Reilly, Fox News, Commentary, Weekly Standard. We've been talking about you the whole first hour, so people are familiar with your background before you appear tonight. But, I mean, that doesn't just happen. So how does that happen where you go underground, you come back up as David Stein, and then all of these people are taking your work? You can't just say, well, I'm going to write this, and then everybody will take it because it's so good. But that happened for you.
Well,
and then we'll get into, of course, the
two ways to answer that. First is, I'm just a very hard guy to kill. I'm a hard man to put down. People have tried. I'm wiry. I'm slippery and wiry. And I just seem to get out of stuff, which I'm very thankful for. I think that's just a blessing, a skill that I have. But more importantly, it really does come down to the quality of your work, the skill of your work. As a revisionist, I did good work. It's work that still holds up today. I'm not ashamed of anything I did in the early 90s, and I would still defend it any day right now. Same thing. Once I began writing political stuff, like GOP mainstream conservative stuff, I like to think I did it well, and I like to think I did it well enough. I knew Andrew Breitbart. I would see Andrew Breitbart regularly, and Breitbart would use my work, even though all they knew was I was David Stein and I did Holocaust documentaries. They had no idea of my actual background beyond or before that. But if you just do solid work, and I think that's one of the things that kids today, and this is just me being an old man, but I think it's something kids today don't get. Just do good work, and generally people will respond well to it. Just don't half-ass it, and don't look for shortcuts. And I was able, during those David Stein years, I was able to take down two separate Obama administration programs that I had targeted that no one else in the conservative movement knew about. One was a Department of Defense diversity program that I was able to completely torpedo by exposing it. I exposed it in the Washington Times, and the Obama administration had to rescind it. I loved those years. I was making actually a lot of I felt a lot of good progress and doing a lot of good during that period. It was a very fun time for me. I missed history. I've always loved the field of history, and I've always loved the field of Holocaust history. But again, I was doing stuff. People were responding well to it, and so I did have some success.
Well, you've had a lot of success, and we will continue on with this conversation after the next timeout and later his current project, which is still forthcoming, which I am going to support, and I hope that you will as well. It rings near and dear to our heart here at this radio program. Stay tuned. The one and only David Cole with us when we come back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Here in Southern Oregon, we put our masks on before we leave the house instead of at the store because the smoke is so thick. It's difficult to breathe with so much ash in the air, and visibility is half mile or less in most places.
Smoke from Oregon's three major fires is unimaginably widespread. Its worst air quality in the world is choking the Pacific coastline, Seattle skyline to the north, San Francisco more than 800 miles to the south, and then to Los Angeles. The scenes and sickening air underscore for many that the climate is in crisis.
Scores of my friends and even USA co-anchor Jesse Edwards have lost their homes in the Alameda fire. And now the Slater fire is burning close to many other friends just to the south. This is USA Radio News.
Are you interested in making $10, $20, even $40,000 a month flipping houses? Then listen to this exciting opportunity. Jeremy Iles and Tony Rosenblum, founders of High Impact Outcomes, are ready to show you how they have helped first-time investors flip hundreds of houses in 39 states for substantial profits. What's their secret, you ask? Just text HURRY to 72000 right now, and they'll send you a free copy of their 40K Formula Flip Kit. See how using their innovative strategies with the right internet search tools can help you create off-market deals that realtors and other investors don't even know existed. Text HURRY to 72000 now to get your free 40K Formula Flip Kit and get ready to see how fast you can receive your first or next real estate paycheck. Text HURRY to 72000 right now to get your 40K Formula Flip Kit plus free tickets to a live interactive online training class. Text HURRY to 72000. That's text HURRY to 72000 for your free 40K Flip Kit now. They can't wait to see you there. Individual results may vary.
New York executives have a bone to pick with the mayor. USA's Kenneth Burns reports.
More than 150 business leaders signed on to an open letter to New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio Thursday, calling on him to take more decisive action on public safety, cleanliness, and other quality of life issues. The signers are a who's who of the city's biggest companies, including Goldman Sachs, MasterCard, Pfizer, and Warby Parker. It also includes the top law firms and real estate developers. The executive said the neglect of quality of life issues are contributing to deteriorating conditions in the city, as well as widespread anxiety. They warned de Blasio that if he does not address the concerns, people who have left NYC would be slow to return. The New York Times points out that de Blasio has championed the working class and shunned the business elite. There's no public record of the two sides working together, and with the mayor term limited next year, there's no incentive for either side to do so.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a lot of people on this program. We've had the guy who got me involved in all of this, Pat Buchanan, many times on this show, a handful of times. The one and only Gary Sinise, whose endorsement is on his book, Republican Party Animal, and so many others. But this is a story as interesting as any I've heard, the story of David Cole's life, and that's what we're talking about tonight. And we're going to get to his forthcoming project in just a moment. And in fact, we're a little bit behind schedule, but there's not been a wasted minute. So I want to make haste, but I want to focus in now on that time period as the Republican Party Animal and the events that go into his book, Republican Party Animal. When we started this program in 2004, we had as our keynote speaker at our kickoff party, Sonny Landham, who played Billy in Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie The Predator. And of course, you know Sonny from his iconic scene where he slices his chest with the knife there on the log bridge before he faces off with the Predator. And he was in a lot of other movies in the mid-80s, action movies with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy, and fascinating guy. Well, Sonny and I became fast friends, and I was a member of his wedding party when he got married, and Sonny passed away a couple of years ago. But one thing, David, that always fascinates fans is conservative or right-wing celebrities, especially Hollywood movie stars.
Because they're so rare.
You had that field clocked. Let's talk about your success as David Stein parlaying into the Republican Party Animal.
Yes. Once I became a member of Friends of Abe, the group that Gary Sinise launched, I became one of their organizers, and I launched my own organization called the Republican Party Animals, which served as a public face for a lot of the people in Friends of Abe, because Friends of Abe, by its charter, by its mandate, was a secret organization. Every meeting that we had, every banquet that we had, everything we did was secret. The Republican Party Animals, the group that I ran, same members, same people, but we had public affairs. We did things where we did not shy away from getting publicity, and from and because of that, a lot of the political figures who would come and speak to the Friends of Abe would be a little more comfortable speaking to the Republican Party Animals, because since the event was public, they knew they'd get a lot more publicity. Being a Republican, whether a congressman or a state senator or anybody, speaking in the heart of Hollywood, the heart of West LA, all the places we'd have our events, we got a tremendous roster of people. And of course, as you mentioned, all of the conservative celebrities, but half of whom of these conservative celebrities were somewhat private about their political views, but about half of whom really wanted to speak and be heard. And those were the ones who I worked closest with in Republican Party Animals organization, because we wanted the people who were willing to shout it from the rooftops.
Okay, so this is something that, again, is so interesting to an audience, my audience, any audience, I guess. Would you say, based upon your experience, which is certainly far and exceeds that of most people, would you say there is a greater number of Hollywood celebrities that are right of center than we would be led to believe? Because, of course, in order to maintain one's career, you have to be part and parcel with the narrative, as it is known, and you can't deviate from that one iota. But are there more conservative people in Hollywood than we would be led to believe.
At its peak, Friends of Abe membership roster was about 2,200 people, and that's quite a bit. Now, I think what your listeners might most be interested in knowing is that, yeah, we did have celebrities, of course, obviously the ones who are open and out, who I can speak about, John Voight, of course, Kelsey Grammer, of course, but the bulk of the membership was actually what we call in the business below-the-line people, the people who are the grips and the gaffers and the stuntmen and the special effects people, the people who do kind of the scut work, the hard work, don't get the limelight. I would say a good majority of those people lean to the right. And that was always the heart of our membership, was the below-the-line people. And then what also a lot of people don't realize is a lot of the really high-ups, the people who go higher than John Voight, higher than Kelsey Grammer, some of the mega producers, the people who have $1 billion and put it into movies or TV shows, and some of the mega producers of some of the biggest TV shows you've seen also lean right. So we had the bulk of our membership was the below-the-line people, the hardworking people whose names you never really know in the business. And then we had the actors and celebrities that most of your listeners would recognize. And then we had the people at the very top, a surprising number of whom did lean right, probably because they had a lot of money and did not want to risk Obama grabbing much of it.
Okay. Now, with that being said, it's also obviously true that most people have flexible beliefs. Very few of us are on either end of the ideological spectrum where we have inflexible beliefs. And if our side was winning the debate, if our side was the path of least resistance, if our side was in vogue and trendy, well, all of these Hollywood celebrities would, of course, fall in line. But, you know, for those who would take a stand, even in semi-privacy, that is to be noted. So that gets us to the crux of the matter, Mel Gibson and his father. So Hutton Gibson made several appearances on this program, one of which brought him widespread condemnation from the likes of the Daily Mail, TMZ, the Hollywood Reporter, Et Al. He never backed down. Entertainment Tonight covered it. Jimmy Kimmel did a comedy sketch, quote-unquote comedy sketch, about his appearance on this program with Hutton Gibson. We stayed in touch. We talked over the phone over the years. To me, a great guy. You had the opportunity to not only meet with Mel Gibson's father, but back in 2004, film the bulk of a documentary featuring him. At the time, I guess, he was pretty long in the tooth. At the time, no one expected him to live to be 101. He passed away just a few months ago, earlier this year, and there was an agreement in place that the documentary wouldn't come to light until his passing. Let's go there now, David.
Yes, well, keep in mind, when Hutton Gibson was in his early 80s, it was like talking to someone in their early 40s. The man was always sure. So young of mind and young of body. And so when I met him, even though he was in his early 80s, it was still his energy, his vibrancy was just absolutely astounding. He and I had a pen pal relationship because he knew my work, my revisionist work from the early 90s. He knew it. He thought very highly of it. And I think, even though I didn't know him all that well, but at the time, going back to late 2003, early 2004, what I was most impressed with and continue to be impressed with is how Mel would never denounce his father no matter what they would throw at him.
Yes.
And even though it might seem to any normal person that it's, well, of course you should never denounce your father, but we're talking about Hollywood. We're talking about an industry that is generally very, very base, very ugly. And a person like Mel, who has kept integrity throughout the whole process. And that's because of Hutton. It's because of the way he was raised. And so Hutton and I, we were talking right when The Passion was about to come out in early 2004. And we were. He asked me if I would come out to Houston, where he was living at the time, in Tomball, Texas, outside of Houston. And he asked if I could come for the weekend and document his views, his beliefs. He had seen my Auschwitz documentaries, my revisionist documentaries. He thought I could do a fair job where I could approach the him objectively, ask the kind of questions that an audience member would ask, that somebody would ask if they weren't as familiar with him. So I did that. I took a cameraman and I went out to Tomball for the weekend, and we logged many, many hours shooting this interview. We tried to cover every conceivable topic, from theology to politics to his family life to his thoughts about Hollywood, pretty much everything you could cover. It was the dictionary definition of exhaustive. But the agreement was that this would be kind of a testament that would come out once he had passed. And we made that agreement, and that was 2004. Of course, thank God he lived to be such a ripe old age, but nobody saw that coming. And when he did pass away in May of this year, it then fell on me to honor the agreement that we had and release this documentary.
And that's what's coming up. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, we got a break now, but when we come back, that's going to be the sole focus of our final segment. We could go 3 hours with David Cole and not nearly scratch the surface. What a riveting conversation we're having tonight on your radio. We'll be back with David right after this, and we're going to cut to the chase and let you know how you can be a part of this documentary. Stay tuned.
Here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The Strategy of Heaven Revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's dime at
866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been one of the most fascinating hours of radio I can remember presenting in 16 years in this business, but it is David Cole, and he is telling you his life story. We're doing it the best we can in the time we've got in 1 hour of commercial talk radio. Fascinating story, riveting interview, going back to his early years, his transition into David Stein, the Republican Party animal, and now his current project, which is this documentary on Hutton Gibson. Now, regular listeners of this program will remember our conversations with Hutton Gibson. I had some behind-the-scenes conversations with Hutton Gibson. He became a friend, sent us a lot of books, that autographed copies of his book. I mean, he was always, of course, eager to talk about Roman Catholicism and the Catholic Church. But now there will be soon, with your support, a documentary detailing the thoughts of Mel Gibson's father. And you're right, David. You're talking about conservative people in Hollywood. Well, we haven't even mentioned Mel Gibson, who has always been one of my favorite actors. I mean, and so many of his movies really bridge the spectrum. I mean, you go to Braveheart, Lethal Weapon, Apocalypto, obviously The Passion.
We're about to start living Mad Max, I think.
Thank you, Keith. That's correct. But, I mean, he's had such a stellar career, obviously an A-list, A-plus list. And there's examples we could draw from to say that, you know, obviously he's one of the good guys in Hollywood. One of your most recent columns at Talkie Mag talks about that, and I would encourage people to read it, and we'll give all that contact information in just a moment. But the thing to me, and you mentioned it in the last segment, that was so stirring about Mel was that I believe it was the Diane Sawyer interview, and they asked him about his father's controversial beliefs, and he said, you know, he wouldn't denounce it. Now, living here in the South, there are no shortage of Southerners who will denounce their patrimony, denounce their ancestors as quick as they can to curry favor with the media. They will sell out their children, their wife, their husband, their father, their mother, whatever it takes. Just tell us we're good people, please. Mel Gibson didn't do it. That is, I think, a feather in his cap. Continue on with the meeting with Hutton Gibson, this documentary, all of that.
Yeah, and the, one of the things that comes through in the many hours of footage we have with Hutton is his what it was like, what it's like inside the family, because a lot of people have only read Hutton's either theological views or maybe political views, but and we cover all of that stuff. But Hutton also speaks so warmly about the family life, and you get to, when you hear him speak, you get to understand why Mel is as he is, and how he could be a man of integrity surrounded by the lack of integrity that is Hollywood. So Hutton spoke about all of these things, and I'll be very honest, he was living so long, again, God bless him, he was living so long that I kind of forgot about this project, because obviously I couldn't begin working on it until he passed, as per our agreement. So when he passed in May, I was like, okay, I got to do this thing. And we live in a time now I couldn't have possibly foreseen in 2004, but a time when everything is about streaming services, Netflix, Hulu, everything. There are many sources, many places you can go for distribution of a film, but I didn't want to do anything with this movie where some corporate entity, some ideologically biased or slanted corporate entity, would force me to put some kind of anti-Hutton slant on it or to jimmy in some kind of negative stuff. I thought the best way to do this film and do it right would be to raise the budget for it from the community of people who know Hutton, appreciated him, have read him, or even just people who are interested in him and his work. That's part of what Mel did, by the way. Part of the reason that Mel was able to stay independent and do movies like The Passion is he would oftentimes just fund his movies himself, because that's the best way in this business to not be corrupted. And I did not want this film about Hutton Gibson to be corrupted by having any corporate entity's clause in it. So that's what I've been doing now for all summer, is raising the budget for the film, and we've got several interviews. Apart from Hutton, we've been able to accumulate interviews with members of Hutton and Mel's church, and getting a lot more perspective from people who knew Hutton, so that it will be a very fascinating, well-rounded documentary, but not the kind of thing that Netflix would make or Hulu would make, where there would be any kind of a negative slant on it, because that is not why I did the project. That's not why Hutton invited me to do the project. And of course, in his memory, in his honor, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to do exactly the project that he wanted done.
Well, I want to get that contact information for how people can support this. But first, I can remember when I first got started. I was 20 years old in the summer of 2000. I was out in Long Beach, California as a delegate for Pat Buchanan. I worked for Pat that year. And there were members of the California delegation. There was one member, two, I think it was two, but one for sure, who I spoke with at length, who was a member of that church. And he talked at length about meeting with Mel and meeting with Hutton and what kind of people they were. Now, this was 4 years before I started this radio program, and certainly many years before I developed a friendship with Hutton Gibson. But what I heard has really stood the test of time based upon what we have seen play out over the years. So I guess the question is, having talked with Hutton on the phone, if you earned his trust and you were worthy of his trust, he would tell you very frankly what he believed. Are you concerned about anything he might have said in that documentary coming back and harming his family?
Here's why I'm not. Hutton was a tremendously intellectual man. He was a strong intellect. He did not say anything during the during all the hours we shot. He didn't say anything that was not intellectually backed up, that was not where he couldn't defend what he was saying. This is a man who, because of his own intellectual integrity, whatever he said, and sure, there are going to be people who are going to see the footage and they're not going to like it, they're going to be upset, and they're going to stamp their feet. But Hutton dealt with that his entire life, and Mel has dealt with that his entire life, and frankly, I have dealt with that my entire life as well. So we get to where we're like, just speak the truth as best you can, as best you know it, as best that you're capable of knowing it, speak it well, and stand by it. And that's what Hutton did. So you know, there's nothing at all in the film that is in any way embarrassing, and Hutton wouldn't have said anything that was embarrassing.
No, he wouldn't. You are so right about that. In my experiences with him, well, you know as well as I, he was a stand-up guy. He didn't say things that were flippant. He didn't say things that could come back to harm. But at the same time, we live in this political climate where, I mean, my God, the fangs are 10 inches long, and they will come after everyone they think they can harm. It is really an interesting time to be alive. But let's get to this, David. I am personally going to support the work of this documentary. I want to see this come out. I'm going to make a personal contribution to this. I don't ask anyone in my audience to do anything that I am not willing to do myself. So when I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, and I've said this on very rare occasions over the 16 years we've been together on this program, I am going to do this. I want you to do it too. And what that is contribute to the funding of this documentary that we can see it come to pass now that our mutual friend Hutton Gibson has passed on to his eternal reward. David, how can people be a part of this?
There is
2 minutes remaining.
Yes, there's a fundraising campaign on the website Indiegogo. If you're able, the best way is people to have that link. So if they have the link to the site Indiegogo, it is all that money goes directly to the project, except for the little bit that gets taken out for credit card processing and platform fees. All goes directly to the project, and you can read all about the project in great detail on the Indiegogo.com site. And the easiest way for people to get there would be to just have the link.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me cut to the chase on this. How you can best quickly find that if you're a fan of this program and perhaps not proficient with Indiegogo. When we go to the next break before the top of the third hour, go to my Twitter account at JamesEdwardsTPC. I am going to link directly to the Indiegogo account where you can donate to this project. You will see a donation from me very, very soon as I can get off the air. I want you to support this work. I don't ask you to support a lot of things outside of the work of this program. I am asking you to support this. I think Hutton Gibson was a fascinating character. I think his message is one that a wider audience needs to hear. David Cole made that possible. And by the way, a huge round of applause for our featured guest this evening, David Cole, 16 years, one of the most memorable interviews I've conducted on this show. I can tell you that right now. And anyway, at James Edwards TPC, there at twitter.com, here in about 5 minutes' time, we're going to have that link up. Ladies and gentlemen, please, please, please donate. $25, $5, $100 or more, whatever you can do, donate to this project. I'm going to be doing the same, and I hope that you will too. Go to at James Edwards TPC at Twitter. David, with seconds remaining, a final word to you. Thank you so much for tonight. I hope the next time will be very soon.
James, you've been so hospitable and kind. Thank you for a wonderful interview.
My friend, it's entirely my pleasure. We will talk to you again very soon. We'll be working with you, and we'll be helping you, and we will talk to you again. Thank you, David Cole. Third hour, still forthcoming. Ladies and gentlemen, big round
of
applause.
Thank you, sir.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.